Dylan.
Scott.
Brian.
How you doing, man?
Oh, my God. I don't know how prepared I'm going to be for this, dude. I'm going to suck cheese.
Yeah. Prepare. I think if we're prepared, it would ruin it.
You're right. So it should. Maybe if I was the more comedic foil and you were more, you knew the facts of everything. No, I think you're right. I'm probably worrying too much, but I think every sentence is going to end like this. We need a body. Okay, now.
Well, if it really sucks, we just won't release it. That's all.
Yeah. Well, maybe it'll be maybe it'll be good. I mean, maybe it'll the actual discussion will you never know, elicit nuggets of information locked in our subconscious.
Nuggets of something, that's for sure.
Yeah, nuggets. So, hold on, dude. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, did you see my email? I've posted the 8 things we're going to talk about in order.
I did, and that's why I'm panicking. No, Bigfoot in Avatar, yes. I'm trying to think specifically this last year as far as advertising was. It's been a couple of years with the jerky stuff, right?
It has
the,
been a couple of years, except for Messing with Sasquatch. Messing with Sasquatch, is that the jerky thing?
Yes.
The beef jerky thing?
This okay. Could be good. We both really don't know what we're talking. I think that isn't that what that was. Well, you know, maybe with that too, it could go in the direction of, I mean, why is Bigfoot in advertising?
That's a good
why
question.
Is it such a persistent cultural icon? I think that's fucking well, totally always fascinating.
Let's just say you and I have started the show, and
yeah.
So we're going to talk.
Did you start the show already?
We're starting the show. I'm already recording. It's going to go out just like this.
I agree.
I think this is going to be the most entertaining thing on the internet. I'm pretty sure. So what
I need another shot of heroin.
we're gonna talk about the year in review for Bigfoot, basically.
Yeah.
And this
right.
This is based on we put a post out there on the BigfootForums.com website. We said, hey, what are the big stories? And this is what we heard. And
right.
And now we've put them in order. So this is it. We're starting and we're gonna start talking.
Okay.
And who cares if we're prepared or not? Because
there's
a couple of these things, I got nothing. So we'll just see how it goes.
Awesome.
Cool. So, number 8. We don't have 10 things. That's how bad it was. We only have 8.
Can I give a little sneak preview to what number 1 is? Nothing.
Stop it. You've ruined everything.
No, I didn't. Dude, I was doing a George Costanza impersonation. Nothing. That's what it's about. Okay, go ahead.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
So Bigfoot and advertising, and besides Messing with Sasquatch, I have to admit I can't think of anything.
No.
So
there probably was a Dodge truck ad or some another truck, you know, some Redwoods shot, vague
something
thing.
Like 4 wheels.
Yeah.
So, but a better question is why? Why do you think advertisers like Bigfoot?
I think because it's actually a bona fide, genuine mystery. That I think most reasonable people go, man, this could be one of those crazy things people talk about that might actually have a basis in reality. And, you know, in the previous years or recent years with Goodall's basic admission that she thinks that they exist or probably exist, the proliferation of books like Meldrum's and the fact that they're really, you know, the PGF hasn't really been proven to be a hoax. And continued apparent sightings of tall, hair-covered, man-like beings. I think I can't think of anything else that kind of matches that kind of mystery. I mean, UFOs kind of. But although we still, you know, I just saw an ad earlier that had a UFO in it. But it's and I think in a sense that's kind of related because I think people think that there could be actually something to that as well. So. Yeah, I think it's basically the persistent, fairly bona fide mystery aspect of it that keeps it in there.
You know what I think it is?
What?
People like monkeys.
That was my second read. I said A before I went off on some tangent. And people like monkeys.
People like monkeys.
People, yeah.
This is our very own monkey. This is a North American monkey. I don't know.
It doesn't have a tail, right?
It doesn't have a tail. No, I know. I don't want to get in a big debate. No, it's not a monkey. I think you're right. I think it's fun to make fun of something that no one's going to get on your back for. You know, it's not like they're killing a wood owl or something like that. It's
right.
you know, if anybody gets offended, it's people like you and me, and they don't care about us.
Right, exactly.
Right.
And it's like, and I think the fact that if they're real, or at the very least the idea is real, that they're close to us. I mean, here's something that would be, wait a minute, I thought we were the only upright walking primate. There's another one, and we haven't put one in a zoo or killed one. It's multi-dimensional, Brian.
It is.
It's multi-dimensional. It's inherently kind of funny and kitschy, yet seriously anthropological and stinky.
See, if I had done any kind of research into this whatsoever, any sort of preparation before this show, there was a cover story on one of these advertising magazines I get at work. It's not Advertising Age, but it's something like that. And there was a whole cover story about Bigfoot in advertising. I'm just now remembering it.
Wow.
Boy, if I had read that prior to being on the show, I would sound really smart.
This might be actually interesting.
Yeah.
If that had happened. But I guess we could speculate as to actually what was written. I think we hit the main points.
Everyone loves Bigfoot. I think that's the thing. Everyone knows about Bigfoot. Everyone loves Bigfoot. And who doesn't like to see humans making fun of stupid animals? I think that's also...
Right.
People
you
like
just,
that.
You didn't just admit that take the position that Bigfoot, if in fact existing, is stupid, did you?
No.
Good Lord.
I think as animals go, he's pretty intelligent, but yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's it.
You believe that, don't you? I mean, no, so you do. I mean, in all seriousness.
Do I believe?
In the sense of, you don't claim to have a direct encounter with one of these things.
No,
but everything you've read, you think that in all probability there is something to this phenomenon.
It is the way I prefer to use, this whole I believe, I don't believe thing, it's my working hypothesis. Based on the evidence and what I've read and what I've heard people say to me, my hypothesis is the thing exists. And that's as good as, I'm not going to say I believe because I think that sounds like I'm talking about the Tooth Fairy. And it isn't like that. It's
We're not talking about the Tooth Fairy?
No.
Okay.
No, I should have mentioned that. Should have mentioned that.
Yeah.
This is the Bigfoot show, not the Tooth Fairy show. But so it's my hypothesis. And if I see one, then I'll stop saying that. I'm not hedging my bet. I'm not saying I'm 99.9% sure. I have to assume that all these footprints and all these sightings and everything else aren't entirely hallucinations or misidentifications or whatever. I mean, I think that a lot of them are, but not all of them.
Yeah, and that's harder to believe than for me anyway.
Right.
I think we've solved it. Good night.
We're finished. That's it.
Bye-bye.
First and last show. Well, let's move on to number 7, and this is something I admit to knowing nothing about right up front. Number 7 are these Yeti tracks, that, according to Cryptomundo, it was a production team for the program Destination Truth, and they got a cast of a really ugly-looking footprint with what I can see. I can see, like, four giant toes. So, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
I got to say, I think it's bogus. I'm going to say that right out front. First of all, I guess they're quite similar to the Johor tracks, which were, what was that, last year's, earlier this year. If these belong to an unknown animal, then that particular example of that animal is apparently some type of rodeo clown. That's my only thing that I could. I mean, the size of the toes are cartoonish.
Well,
I mean,
it's got big flappy feet with giant toes.
And who would have guessed it was in connection with a TV production? What are the odds
that they
would find evidence in connection to producing a TV show? That's amazing to me.
It's crazy, isn't it? It is.
Yeah.
Stranger things have happened. Yeah. I'm jumping ahead to two of our future major things that happened this past year. Did Meldrum talk about these in the Texas conference? Because his whole thing was about the Yeti tracks. Were these in there?
I don't know.
I was not.
I was hawking my wares at my table.
Oh, that's
table.
Right. You were...
Wait a minute. Didn't he talk about? I thought he talked about his. I'm sure he talked about his paper.
A little bit, yeah.
And I thought, I remember hearing something, it was about some track, so I don't know.
His presentation, since you were there, but since you were off selling DVDs. DVDs of what, by the way? What DVDs would you have to be selling?
You know, it's funny you should ask, Brian. Squatching and Journey Toward Squatchdom.
You did what? Those? You did those?
I did those,
I
yes.
love those.
Thank you. Yeah? And yeah. Journey Toward Squatchdom. Is for those who aren't familiar with them, which I'm sure is the vast majority of our listening audience, Journey Toward Squatchdom is a out and out mockumentary I made about 12 years ago, and because believe it or not, I'm actually somewhat serious about this phenomenon, but I wanted to kind of have fun with those who, like, every time they go out and they find a bone fragment. I mean, literally every time they go out, they find something. So I kind of want to have fun with that. That aspect of it. And then Squatching, which is the other one on the DVD available at Amazon.com, was a little more serious because it dealt with something that happened to me in 92, which you and I already did a show on, and yep. I'm sure would bore. Yeah. But
By the way, I listened to the show you did with Melissa.
Yes.
And you were a lot better on her show than you were on my show.
You're hard to compete with, man. You're pretty funny. You're dry. I've already wheezed and laughed a few times. It's hard.
You did a better job on that show. You sounded much more interesting than you did when you were on my show. And I don't know.
Well, I think she doesn't talk as much as you. That's
true.
She shuts up.
She's
and,
a listener.
You know, yeah.
She's a listener. Yeah.
She is a listener, and she's a damn good audience too. I mean, she finds me funny, which is always good.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, I thought, a very good interview. She asked good,
it was a great
rounded
interview.
Question.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
I did that completely naked. A lot of people don't
really?
Know that.
Really?
Yeah. With a dunce cap on and wearing one left shoe.
One left shoe. Then you weren't completely naked. You were just mostly naked.
I lied. Damn it. Okay.
Okay.
What were we?
And
on?
You've also done the
besides peyote.
No, right now we're plugging your stuff. You did the walking series.
Oh, yes, and then oh, that's right. Gosh, thank you. That's very nice of you to get these plugs. I mean,
no problem.
It's not. I would have done the show without the plug.
I'm
but
sure
since
you
brought
would.
It up. Yes, I've done three documentaries on the Pacific Crest Trail about kind of the subculture of the Pacific Crest Trail, called Walk, Still Walking, and Even More Walking. Available at walkpct.com, and actually part of my interest in Bigfoot was part of the impetus for doing that first one, because I thought, who better to talk to are people who spend 5-6 months of their lives hiking through Oregon and Washington, and maybe have heard weird screams, seen some weird prints, maybe an encounter or two, whatever. And I actually ended up meeting a couple people that had some really interesting stories to tell. They're in the first two films, Walk and Still Walking, and I'm actually going to do another one. I hiked about 300 miles this past year, and I'm planning to do another about between 500 to 1,000 miles.
Holy smokes.
This upcoming, yeah. It's great out there, man. I love it, because the doctor said I was low on blisters. So, no, there are great people out there. There's, like, real palpable joy out there. I think it's because people get away from civilization all that, and it's just being out there, and it's fun, and it's good for you. So, if anybody's interested. In fact, who was it on Bigfoot Forums? Jay Lee D.
Yep.
Had a very nice plug for me on there the other day. It was very, very kind to hear that. And she said she actually got inspired by watching these two to get out and walk more.
Wow.
Which is tough because she's in a wheelchair. So, no, she's not. Jay Lee, if you're listening, I just did a bad Don Rickles right there. I don't know what that means, but...
Wait, I should get a rim shot sound effect going.
That would be good.
So anyway, number seven was Yeti Tracks. No, unless you have anything else to plug, you're going to be on The Tonight Show or something?
I'm feeling no. No, I'm going to be at the Sahara with Slappy White in 3 weeks. That's enough. Plugging. Half the people listening to this have already turned it off. Quite.
This is about Bigfoot and the latest findings where
that's
they found the dirt track.
Harry, all sure he ever talks about is his DVDs.
Exactly. Yes. I want dermal ridge evidence. Why am I talking like I've been eating helium all my whole life? Anywho.
I don't know. Well, that was number seven, the Yeti tracks. We don't know anything about them. We think they're bogus. I personally, I have a hard time with the whole Yeti thing, but I haven't really looked into it that much. So,
yeah. I don't, you know, isn't there been a lot, like, who was some of the early books, like Napier?
Yeah.
I think was skeptical. He was a big blue bear advocate. Yeah. And then you have Mesner, Reinhold Mesner's book, which is kind of an interesting book, but I thought he was a little weak on the photographic evidence using the one photo he had of this, I think, Tibetan blue bear, I think is the name of it, that he thinks is what accounts for a lot of the Yeti tracks. But it, oddly enough, though, you know, the encounter that he actually had seems to contradict that notion, because he said that when he encountered this thing in, I guess it was in moonlight, it was nighttime. From what I gathered from the story, the thing was upright and then scurried along. And I obviously bears can rise up, but I don't think they can scurry along on two legs unless they're unless there's a Russian circus in town.
Could have been a circus bear. Could have been a circus.
I don't
bear.
Know.
Has anyone there checked? Has anyone checked to see where the circuses were in Tibet at that time?
He did mention it had a large ball on its nose.
Well, there you go.
So, yeah. That's
a dead giveaway for a circus bear. You know, the other reason I'm just going to mention this while I'm thinking about it, the reason I wanted you on this show is because you read. You read things. You read.
Yeah.
You're referencing books.
Kind of.
So, obviously, you've read them. And that's terrific. I really encourage reading. I think everyone in the audience should read.
It's a good hobby, and... excellent if you want to get your citizenship papers.
Have another drink, Mr. Harriet.
I'm actually drinking coffee with rum.
Wow. No. Oh, okay. No. So number six, moving right along. Six is the Texas Bigfoot Research Conservancy Conference in Jefferson, Texas, past November. And I put it on there because both you and I were there.
Yep.
And it was a heck of a lot of fun.
It was. I fell asleep about an hour into it and woke up Sunday in a gutter.
Jefferson.
It was in Jefferson. Right. It was great. Those are always great. Craig Wolheater, who was supposed to be here tonight. But
He was unavoidably detained. And I'm not going to get into his personal life, but the police were involved. And I think that's enough to say about
something
that.
About dead hookers, cleanup, I don't know. it's always fun because I think Craig has a really good balance of having fun with the topic, but he's serious about it too. And I think that's very important in this field.
Yeah.
It's a good mix.
I was stunned by the number of people that were there. I guess it was like 450 people or something, which is an unbelievable number. I never thought it'd be that many people.
It was actually 125. Craig kind of inflates the numbers.
Was it mirrors? They just had a lot of mirrors around?
Yeah. There was a lot of people. And I think when he had it set up at the beginning where, you know, people walked in and they actually go right by the merchant's table.
I bet you
enjoyed that.
I bet you did.
Yeah, that was...
I bet you did.
Actually, yeah, I did. I did. I enjoyed that. And except for Rick Knoll, who was sitting to my right going, does my hair look good? Anywho.
Yeah.
He does. Rick Knoll, seriously, has the best hair in the
It's amazing hair.
Country.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Beyond question. There's no better hair in all of Bigfoot, world of Bigfoot.
He actually rents his hair out to various hard rock bass players.
Does he?
Yeah,
that's
it
probably
makes good money.
A great source of income for him.
Yeah,
I've never seen him without his hair, but I'm sure you're.
I have not pretty.
No,
not pretty. It's very oddly shaped head. As
does he has a sagittal crest up there underneath his hair?
Sagittal crest, a swastika. It's very odd. I don't understand it, but.
Well, the conference was a lot of fun. There were a whole lot of people there, and I think it's funny because a lot of people criticize the TBRC for not having it in a large city, like in Dallas or something like that. And still, they're out there in the sticks, out in Jefferson, and they had 450 people. So I don't know.
Yeah.
If it had been in Dallas, what is it, like 1,000 people? I mean, how many people can come to this?
You know what was cool? I mean, I think it's I like it because it's actually in areas where, you know, kind of closer to areas where there's been, you know, purported sightings and. There was this, God, I wish I could remember his name, but the kid who was there who apparently had this, maybe you could remember his name, he was, who had a sighting like 4 miles from where that was and when he was younger.
Oh,
and,
yeah, yeah. Oh, man, what's his name? He's in the TBS. Yeah, I'm going to kick myself when somebody tells me what his name is.
Yeah, it was really and
it's a terrific it's a terrific story.
Yeah, and it's really it was very believable. You know, I mean, the way he acted it out, what he said this thing did, how it acted in relation to him, you know, and it was a close, I mean, he was probably, I think, 9 or 10 when it happened, so you always got to factor in what the imagination or whatever, but I mean, if he was very believable when he told the story and how this thing was moving in relation to him, was moving through the, heard something moving through the brush, saw a big brown mass, thought it was a bear, and then he said he looked over and then saw this hand reach up on a post and, like, it stood up. And then lurched toward him and lurched back. And I mean, the only thing I can think, if it wasn't actually a Sasquatch, what it—I mean, again, through the filter of a 10-year-old's imagination, if you had like some kind of mangy bear, does that ring a bell?
hey, you're jumping. And ahead. It
was, yeah, because the way he described the movement was kind of like big animals would do that. But I don't know. He seemed pretty sure that it wasn't a bear. I mean, the way he described, being as close as he was, you know, I think a snout would have been fairly easy to detect, even, you know, and remember at that age. But a good tail, again, I wish I could remember his name.
Well, and
let's go to a clip.
Yeah. Oh, damn. I don't have the clips. And, well, in his story, he says it was standing there, too, so obviously not a bear.
Yeah, that it kind of pulled its stuff up. Yeah, exactly, up.
Yeah.
On this post, and he thought it was a hand, not a paw. So, but yeah, it was. I think I've been to three or four conferences there where was it, Arkansas? And no, it was Jefferson, Texas. And
Jefferson,
it was,
Texas.
And it was good. They do an excellent job, and they have interesting speakers, and the food, but no, food is fine.
It was Texas barbecue, right? It was barbecue.
Yeah. And then just going out to the local places, always had a good time there. Recommend it to any potential Bigfooters. If you haven't been there, I recommend whatever they're having the next one, which I bet Craig will probably do this upcoming year.
You know, and actually I think, you know, if it were me, I'd probably hold off a year because I don't know that there's enough to talk about. But that's just – I also think it maybe it builds up – a better audience, but I also know it's a big source. It's a big source of revenue for that organization. So I suppose that's
right.
That doesn't make any sense. They need the money. So,
well, that's it. It's very interesting what you said there about it. It's something I think a lot of people get very impatient with in the film. Excuse me. Let me have another clean needle in the realm of Sasquatch, which I think a lot of people feel because more people are interested in it. You know, we have the internet. And we're talking about it and. Blah blah blah, and you know we've got more technology. But I think when you actually get it into some of these areas, especially in the Pacific Northwest, where these purported sightings have occurred, and you really stand there for a while and look around, you wet your pants is what you do. And I know I know. Sorry, went on a tangent. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I think that I see something just like this happen on the Bigfoot forums. There's only so many things to talk about, and I think that's one of the reasons why we're not going to do this show more than, you know, good Lord, not more than once a month, because really, what are we going to talk about unless something really interesting happens? And, you know, going back to Melissa's show for a minute, the fact that she can pump one of those things out a week and, you know, a good 3/4 of them are actually interesting. That's, I don't know. It's there's not much going on. And I think people get frustrated.
Yeah.
You expect more stuff, you expect more things, but the more, it's almost like the inverse has happened, that the more people are looking at it, it seems like the fewer things are actually happening. It seems like all the good stuff happened back in the 70s.
Right.
When there were like 8 guys going out there doing stuff, and now that there's, you know, anyway, now I'm on a tangent.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's harder now to separate the wheat from the chaff because you have so many people on the internet, and you've just got, you can have unsubstantiated reports, and you've, and people get excited, and they read books, and... But the good thing about it, I'm sure you've noticed this as well, especially in the last couple of years, is that you've got more healthy critical analysis going on with the phenomena. You've got more, like, fairly diehard skeptics at Bigfoot forums now.
Yes.
And not skeptics. I think there are those, but But people who are like Seth Skeptic, what a great example. That guy is apparently university teaches great humor about him. Mm-hmm. Obviously interested in the phenomena, but he'll get right on there and say, "Look, I don't believe this yet. I don't think the evidence is strong enough." I would agree with him on a purely scientific level. I think there's more than enough to warrant further investigation. But
absolutely,
I think it's helping. You know, people who get into it, there is that excitability. Oh, wow. You know, they read Green's book. They see all these photos. And then when you really, like, start applying the scientific method to a lot of it, it's pretty clear that there isn't proof. There's a lot of interesting things, but nothing that, you know, again, short of a body. We can always hope that it'll turn itself in one day. You know, maybe show up at a local police station, submit the DNA testing, maybe some hair sample cuts, whatever, you know, some good fun, and then leave. But until either a carcass, or some incredibly great photography, which we'll still be skeptical because of all the CG capabilities.
Yeah, I don't think photography is going to do it.
Yeah. But I hope the chronology of discovery would be that a carcass is found or a part of a carcass.
Right.
Because I think it would really be horrible. I mean, like this recent story, the whole thing with the tiger in the zoo. I really, in later years, really come to hate zoos. I think zoos essentially suck because, you know, well, what do you expect? You're taking the freedom of this animal away. You're enclosing it. And, you know, I mean, some of the evidence now is looking, maybe indicating that these kids were taunting this thing. Well, what do you expect it to do?
Yeah.
You know? And now they have to shoot it because
these
kids probably taunted it, you know?
And it did what it was hardwired to do, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why it's always a double-edged sword when I talk about it a little bit, because I think, God, it would be horrible. The more you talk about it, the more people know about it. Well, aren't you increasing the chances, therefore, of one getting captured or killed? Well, I hope, on the other hand, maybe it's getting people to think more about, you know, animals and stuff and how we treat them, and then maybe that possibility can be avoided, you know.
Yeah.
Did I make any sense in the last 2 minutes? Was that
a little bit? Yeah, a little bit. I'm not sure what it has to do with the TBRC conference, but whatever. You know, we're going with the flow.
I was bringing it back. Yes, Craig Wohlheuter should head the coalition. That's what I was meaning to say.
Yes, obviously.
The anti-zoo coalition.
Since he's not here, we can say that.
Correct.
Number five, some of these things are touched on in what you just said, but Jeff Meldrum's paper, his Ichnotaxonomy of Giant Hominid Tracks in North America. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Ichnotaxonomy?
I think you did. I don't have the paper in front of me. I have read, I think, 90% of it and understood about 8%.
Yeah. I read enough of it to know that it had a lot of really big words in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people look at immediately and go, well, it must be true.
That's right.
If I can't understand that word,
wow.
My God, this must be onto something.
This guy's smart.
And he is. Jeff is.
Oh, he's super smart. You know, the other thing about Jeff, and this will dovetail nicely back into the TBRC thing, he is so gracious with his time at these conferences, and he will talk to anybody who walks up to him.
True.
It's amazing. He's just incredible at these things. But anyway. That's,
I wish he'd wear pants, though.
He should.
That's a little annoying.
Yeah, I think that would probably cut down on the number of weirdos that walked up to, but anyway. In this paper, he tried to name our animal that we're talking about here, Anthropoides ameriborealis.
Right.
I like the ameriborealis part. I don't know why.
Yeah, that's another one of those words. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's got to be true.
Ameriborealis.
That's a star system, isn't it?
It sounds like that's Sulu set a course to Anthropoides ameriborealis.
The one shaped like a giant footprint, Captain? Yes.
We're going to the big toe. So obviously we can't say anything intelligent about the paper relative to how important it was or anything like that.
Oh, I think we can.
Okay.
And, I think it's interesting. And even Jeff said this to me when I talked to him briefly about this. He didn't have his pants on, by the way. And, he said it doesn't, because he knew that there's going to be arguments against this. I mean, and he knows because it's not proof. And in fact, he says that in the paper.
Yes, he does.
He says, well, this does not say what made these. But I guess, who was it? Ape Man on BFF, who was a very bright guy who works with gorillas.
Yeah, I like him.
Yeah, good guy. Is the fact the way he kind of put it forth is that it was a clever approach by Jeff to get people considering these tracks, specifically the Patterson tracks. And I kind of see that point, but at the same time, isn't the basic purpose of those papers to the assumption is you're dealing with something genuine. And since that hasn't been established yet, if it ever can be specifically with the Patterson Gimlin tracks, is it completely straightforward or honest within the parameters of science, so to speak? You know what I'm saying? It's like, well, I'm not saying these are. Well, if you're not saying these are, what are you saying?
Right.
Are they? If you're leaving open the possibility of hoaxing, then why don't you discuss that possibility as well instead of just the side of the argument where you think that they're Bigfoot tracks?
Right.
That's what I'd like to see more from Jeff and other biz. A little more attention paid to the possibility. These may not be from an unknown hominid, but were somehow faked.
You know, we should get him on the show.
Absolutely.
We should
is he on the phone right now?
Let's call
Jeff,
him.
Jeff, are you wearing pants?
No, seriously, we should try to get him on sometime to talk about this, because this is
yeah.
Interesting stuff.
That is good. And you know me. I mean, the PGF to me is just continually.
Don't jump ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I am. My God, I just love it. It's just the greatest mystery
in
Bigfoot.
It's the greatest mystery until we get to number two on our list. So let's move on, because we want to make sure this doesn't go on for 6 hours.
How long have we been on now? Lord.
31 minutes and 40 seconds.
Wow.
I know. Time is flying by.
Yeah.
Number four on our list is Monster Quest. This was added to the list. People on the forum, a couple people said that they thought it should be there. Monster Quest is a show on the History Channel. Is that correct?
Yes.
And
the big eye graphic, growling.
The creepy, scary monkey eye, right.
Yeah.
Only two of these shows have been about Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Right. And on one of them...
which I did not see, by the way, I must say.
You didn't see the Snellgrove Lake one?
I didn't see the Snellgrove DNA one. No, I did not.
Right.
I saw the other one.
Darn. The other one, wasn't as good. But the Snellgrove DNA one was interesting. You could tell when you're watching it that the whole thing was, sort of reenacted, the whole show. But anyway.
Yeah.
I'm forgetting the guy's name. He's right here in Minnesota. His name.
Oh, Doug Hajcek.
No, Kurt Nelson. Doug Hajcek produced
it.
Yeah. Well, they're both in Minnesota, aren't they? Doug Hajcek produced the show.
Coincidence?
But, yeah. Kurt Nelson, who's a biologist at the U of M, looked at some DNA found on some screw boards, which are these nasty-looking boards with screws in them to keep bears from going through your window, and said they were remarkably human-like.
Did any of the crew members have bloody socks? Afterwards, that's what I'd like to know.
I don't know. Of course, the point with this is if you've got this DNA, so what? I mean, it's you need to type it against something, right? You need to have a comparison.
Right, and I actually think apart from a carcass being found eventually, or hopefully it does happen, at one being killed, intentionally or otherwise. I think, an ape man has gone into this on Bigfoot forums quite a bit. I think if you could get enough of a DNA sequence where you're going, wow, this is very similar, to an orangutan, but it's not a human and whatnot, and, you could clearly say, and it seems to me that this information must exist on some databases somewhere, that you've got these DNA sequences or the patterns, and you were able because it seems like something would be fairly difficult to fake. How do you fake an extensive DNA pattern like that? I think it would open up the eyes of a few more scientists. I would even venture to say, as science progresses, that we're going to be able to derive more information from specific DNA patterns, and that you could even, say, wow, this is like this. It's probably this big. It's probably like this. And I don't know how, if you're completely skeptical of the Bigfoot phenomenon, how you could look at that and go, it could be, I think it would open the eyes of at least some scientists, like I said, to at least, you know, perhaps the plausibility that there is something out there. But, you know, you hear so much stuff about conflicting stuff about DNA. What is out there? You know, what we need is a DNA sample and get that sucker, that sample, you know, part of it locked in, you know, under lock and key, and then somehow post these on the web or whatever, instead of always, you know, the mysterious DNA, we're waiting on the DNA analysis, and
yes,
and it never turns out. It's always inconclusive, and, you know, I don't know. I mean, it just seems like, and especially in connection to TV shows. I mean, there's always the tease factor. Hopefully, you know, anybody listening takes that into consideration, that believe it or not, sometimes shows like to tease things along to make you think something might be revealed at the end, but nothing is.
What kind of shows? What shows? No shows.
I don't know. What's your question? Excuse me. You know, it's just having worked in TV, in fact, I know of, like, from 15, 20 years ago, I had actually, and I'm not going to name names, so actually confessed that on one of the sightings episodes, there was, if you remember the sightings episode where you had, it was this very slow walking apparent Bigfoot, and he's walking from right to left, and then he slowly turns toward the camera.
Okay.
And it just looks fake. If you have a brain, that's a fake anyway. But I talked directly to a producer who told me that he knew the guy who ordered that to be as part of the show, to put a piece of fake video in there.
Really?
And again, I don't want to name it, but yeah, I mean, I know the person, and I don't want to name his name.
He ordered it to a fake video that they were going to present
as real? Actually, they wanted something to be on the show. So it was. Now, the guy who told me this was not directly on the show, but he knew the guy directly. And I know this is like triple hearsay, so how valid it? But I found the guy to be very credible when he told me this. And so that, and I think that probably happens, if not out and out faking, what you get, because, you know, you got to look in the eyes of TV executives, or at least some TV executives, is, hey, it's always, but you always got to keep the mystery going. You got to keep, because, you know, I think they have the fear that, oh, if there's no result or there's nothing, if you say that too early, nobody's going to keep watching. And I think that's just shitty and a horribly insincere. I mean, unless you do something completely comedic, if you're being, you know, like, you got to do it comedically, fine. You know it's a joke, but to seriously try to tease things out like that when you know that there's nothing to really reveal, I think, is pretty cheesy.
Yeah.
I just, you know.
Yeah. Especially when they do it on front line. I hate it when they do it on front line.
Yeah. You know, that whole, yeah.
And on Nova. No, they don't. My point being, they don't do it on those shows, and people watch those shows. And
I think
that,
exactly.
Why can't, you know, not taking anything away from Monster Quest, but why can't this subject be treated the way Nova attempts to present information? Why can't it be presented in that kind of a way? You know, and you look at all the stuff Hi-Chek does, and again, I'm not taking away from what Hi-Chek has done, but when Legend Meets Science, everything, it's got this sort of breathless, sensational feel to it with the special effects, and, you know, like you said, the evil ape eye in the cutaways and everything, and it's just, it's a little too sensational. I just want to have the facts laid out in a sort of clear manner. And without the sensation, I guess, and without
the cheaply reenacted things. Exactly, I completely agree. I think the problem is, you know, from what I've heard, that the Bigfoot shows on like Discovery and History and whatnot are very high rated. Whoa, there's dollar signs. Well, we got to do more of these. Well, there isn't really any evidence. Well,
so what?
Maybe we could. So what? We'll tease that there's better evidence, and we'll it's fairly obvious, I think, if you watch a lot of this stuff, that's what's there. And I guess, I was going to give it a pass, but no, I think it sucks. It's bad. It's not good for the field. To me, for, you know, as far as promoting the study of it, it doesn't help it.
No.
I think it just makes someone who's skeptical even more skeptical. Maybe it's good for the big feet, though.
I think it's good for them, actually, the actual Sasquatch.
Yeah.
It keeps them.
So they're actually sitting there, you know, going, thank God they're doing this crap, because now there's going to be less people believing it's real, because we don't have a big eyeball that stares into the camera, and we don't growl when we look right into the camera.
No. But the eyes do light up red, from what I've heard.
Yes. And I, you know, that's what I saw.
That's what you saw.
Nobody can believe me now because I'm so being so comedic on this show. But again, I'm willing to take a lie detector test about that thing that happened to me.
You aren't going to pay for it.
I'm not paying for it. Why should I? I know what I saw.
Absolutely. You know, I wanted to say one other thing about Monster Quest. I think that the In Search Of stuff that came out in the 70s, or was that the early 80s? No, it was late 70s, right? In Search
70s,
of,
yeah.
That treated the subject, I think, better than a lot of the more recent shows because it was much more serious. I think it was more serious. And Leonard Nimoy is the most kick-ass narrator you can possibly get for anything.
Yeah, he was good. And I think it's also just, you know, not just specifically those shows, but just kind of part of the zeitgeist, if you will, of our era. I mean, when you live in an era where how Britney Spears wiped her ass this morning, it doesn't really surprise me that you're going to have shows that are going to be hypey when it comes to Bigfoot. You know, it's just, there's so much crap on TV. There's a lot of good stuff on TV too, but there is a ton load of crap and sensationalism, as you pointed out. So, it seems, it's just harder to separate the wheat from the chaff. I mean, you can hear stories, and it's like, how do you know? Somebody just didn't go to the BFRO database, got to start doing whatever, blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Right.
But I don't know, man. It's, I guess in some ways it makes it more interesting now, because it's just, it has definitely gotten more popular, though. Absolutely. It seems to me that
much higher on the radar.
Yeah. So,
and not to give too short a shrift to the other Bigfoot Monster Quest episode was the one that was filmed in the Pacific Northwest, and there were the group of women, and then that other guy. again, the research for the preparation I've done for this show is really, really astounding. But the other guy who had the horses, I actually had a little behind the scenes peek. I was there when the women part of that was being filmed, so I can't be not on camera, obviously, because I'm not a woman, so I couldn't be on camera.
As far as we know,
and that's the story. I'm sticking to it. So it was a lot of fun for me to see how the sausage is made. You know, like all the stuff that was filmed and how grumpy everybody was and how much they hated the camera guy and everything else, and then to see the actual finished product was kind of fun. But of course, that was me and like two other guys, so very small audience.
I guess you can look at it, you know, I mean, it's kind of cool. I think it's great that there's more women involved in the field, and I honestly do feel that much like was the case with Fosse and Jane Goodall, that I actually think the chances of a close encounter with these things are better for a woman than a guy, simply on a basic non-testosterone level, but less threatening, more of a sense of loving, you know, just more, you know.
I was out there with these women, and I don't know that there was a loving woman in that group.
Well,
now I'm in so much trouble. That's okay. I'm going to edit that part.
No, whatever. No, but I guess the thing, I don't know, you know, it's kind of, you know, again, it gets back to the, well, we got to do more shows, so I think it's kind of good. If it showed that and inspired other women who are interested in the Sasquatch phenomena to get out there and do it, fine. But there was that whole thing with the grass and all. It's just another, like, oh, you know, and look at this indentation. It just seemed hypey to me.
And, you know, that grass in particular, we went back and looked at that after the production had stopped, and we decided that it wasn't anything squatchy.
Yeah, and of course, was that included in the show? No,
absolutely,
because it's
not
dramatic.
Right.
And it's not, it's, you know, it had the swelling music and all that stuff.
You know,
If
I had seen on that show, you know, they went, you know, the premise is, here's a group of women, let's see how they do research as opposed to how men do it. I didn't see them do anything that I haven't seen men do. You know, they put out cameras, they looked for tracks, and I didn't see anything else. You know, I didn't see anything that was uniquely female in their approach. And that's not their fault. It's really the fact that I don't think the show was planned as well as it could have been. But I didn't see that. I didn't see, like, well, what did they do? you know, that, that guys...
Right, well, apparently you missed the sub where they all were in hula skirts and
oh,
then
I didn't
dancing.
See that part.
Yeah, that was good. And they actually got a call from an elk.
An elk, a very lonely elk, a lonely elk.
So it, yeah, you know, again, it's double-edged on that. I mean, I think it's a great show, an example. If it helps to inspire, fine. But it had that, and apparently from what I've heard of it, I mean, there was that whole scripted thing. It was scripted. Okay, now we need you doing this. That's
right.
Not research. That's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I guess you, you know, but then that contradicts the drama. If you're going to dramatize it, be a little clearer what that it's a drama. Don't try to sell it as this.
Yeah.
You know, then I'm being extreme there, too, because what if something actually was, they did hear something out there, or they really found a clear print? That could have possibly happened.
That's the really frustrating bit. There were sort of two things that happened that were genuinely interesting in that whole week. One of them was the first night they were up at their camp, and they think that there may have been rocks tossed at them. And second
right.
was towards the end of the week, we heard what sounded like wood knocking. None of those things were recorded or on the show. So it's like,
right.
because you had this shot list that you were going after, you know, the really cool stuff doesn't happen third bullet point down. You know, the really cool stuff just happens.
Right.
And if you're not recording it, you're not going to get it.
I know. And it's just so, I mean, and just for any, I guess, would-be investigators out there going, I think you just, I mean, you have to take into consider the odds that you're going to have a genuine encounter with a Sasquatch in some form. I think you see it all the time with, like, it seems to me with the BFRO, every friggin' expedition. There was rocks tossed at us. I mean, do they ever consider the possibility that maybe a pine cone fell out of a tree or maybe a guy who left 5 minutes ago disappeared and who knows? You know, not saying
right.
that is what happened,
right.
but it's almost like it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well,
it's almost like subconscious. I'm going out to spend time. Damn it, something's going to happen. And the other explanations aren't given enough weight when,
yeah.
you know...
The people
just,
who...
Yeah.
Oh,
no, go ahead.
The people who say that when they go out there, you know, something happens every time I go out, and if you go out and you don't have some Bigfoot-related thing, then you're just not doing it right. Those are the ones
yeah.
you got to watch out for, because...
Yeah, it's yeah,
if it was
exactly.
that easy and if it was that common, there'd be one in every zoo and there'd be stuffed in the natural history museums of the world, and we wouldn't be
right.
having this conversation. We'd be talking about something else.
Yeah, that's why it just seems like almost there's been so much interesting yet inconclusive evidence brought forth that it always comes back. You know, it's like if there's going to be some a body, I mean, body or some kind of... a well-sequenced DNA sample, you know, and again, some good, really good photographic evidence, but again, that wouldn't be proof, but something to spur
right.
further research. But, you know, other than that, it's just another oh, yeah, rock, great, you know, who knows? Who knows? You didn't see what threw it. It could be a trained bear.
Could be a trained bear who throws rocks with his
Prep.
Paws.
With his paws.
Moving right along to number three.
Yes.
This one's going to be fun, and it kind of ties into what you were just talking about with the BFRO.
Yeah.
The Jacobs photos that swept the internet.
Yeah.
In the past couple of months. These are photos, a set of three photos captured from a game cam that was pointed at a salt lick, from what I can understand.
Right.
The first two photos show what are clearly bear cubs. And
yep.
then the last photo shows something hairy. And
yeah.
What do you think? Go ahead, spit it out.
I think in all probability, strong probability, it's a bear, you know, and because somebody posted photos of what a mangy bear looks like, and
yeah.
it looked very, very close to that. To say it was probably or certainly a juvenile Sasquatch is incredibly presumptive.
Absolutely.
But I think, again, maybe it's part of that whole wanting so desperately for something to happen or perhaps thinking it might make a good sales pitch
no.
might be an incentive, too. So,
I absolutely agree. And actually, I think what's interesting about these photos, less than what's shown in the photos, I think it's interesting to as an example of what's happened to the BFRO over the past couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. It's,
because I can't imagine that, let's say 4 years ago, with the people who were in that organization at that time, that these photos would have gotten as much play as they did from the current organization, which I think is an entirely
right.
different group than it used to be.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot more money coming in now. That might be possibly an incentive to want to keep more money coming in to make bold statements like that.
It could be.
I mean, you can never fully know someone's, I think, intentions or what they know or what they, whatever is conscious or subconscious, but I think to clearly state unequivocally that those
right.
were juvenile Sasquatch is unconscionable.
And that's
the
approach the BFRO has taken on this is that they are clearly that's a juvenile Bigfoot in that last photo. And
yeah.
to suggest otherwise, and, you know, Alton Higgins posted some photos, I think on the Bigfoot forums, that, for me anyway, pretty much say, well, if it ain't a bear, it's a really ugly-looking Bigfoot, and I'm going to say the odds are much, much greater that that's a bear than anything else. And their response
yeah.
is basically, no, we've had some mangy bear expert tell us that couldn't be something. I don't, whatever it is, their position is clearly juvenile Bigfoot. And I just think that's irresponsible.
Yeah, it's not, and it. But boy, it brings the suckers in, doesn't it?
It got a lot of people talking, didn't it? And
yeah,
here we are talking about it. Yeah, and I have to preface. Well, actually, since I've already said this, it's not prefacing what I was going to say, but prologuing what I just said. There are some good people in the BFRO. Not saying that
yes.
everybody in the BFRO is an idiot. No way. So that's. I just want to get that out there. Because I always get
I have
friends who are in the BFRO, and I don't want them to think that I'm talking about them. I'm not talking about them.
No.
So there you go. Jacob's photos.
Yeah.
It's a bear. BFRO.
Yeah, I mean, I'll leave a smidgen of doubt because I wasn't there. I'm pretty much a radical empiricist when it comes to stuff like that. Can I say absolutely 100% that it's a bear? No, but I am 99.9873% convinced it is a bear.
Could have been a small child in a bear suit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Could have been.
But that's even less. It might have been one of those, like a midget. That had that Wolfman disease.
There you go.
That's possible.
Yeah, it's yes. Yeah. You know, stranger things have happened.
Right.
So,
hey, let me ask you this. I'm sorry. Oh, we got no. more topics. I was going to ask you something. But anyway,
we only got two more. Two more.
Okay.
Second to last. This was the 40th anniversary of the Patterson-Gilman film.
Yep.
Kind of a big deal. It's really great now after 40 years that the film has been proven to be real, and we no longer have to debate it.
Right, exactly.
Wasn't
we need to go another hour, my friend?
It's so terrific. No, I'm not making that claim. I'm just saying that 40 years is a long time. It's a singular piece of work. Believe in it or not, it's nothing
yes.
of its quality has ever been produced.
Absolutely.
Since and I don't know why that really bothers me. But it's true. It is the case that we have this one really great film.
Yeah.
And nothing else.
That's because it might be a fake. But anyway,
Says you.
Says me. No, but I'm not, you know, actually, I told Will Heater was talking to me. Craig, he was supposed to be on the show, but had some bad news happen. He couldn't be on tonight. Basically, the last couple of years, I've been about 85% skeptical of the Patterson film. I now moved to about a 78.38%.
No.
Skeptical. Yeah, I moved a little bit back.
You're moving back.
A little bit, but there's still a lot of fishy stuff about this. It's still enough fishy stuff for me to lean toward it being a fake. Now the film itself on the fishy part, the one thing in particular for me that still doesn't jive or to me suggests hoaxery, if you will, is the indentation that occurs below the hip. You know, the quote unquote hip waiter thing. I've tried to reconcile that, watching it, that somehow that's a natural, would be some part of a natural upright walking occurrence. And it just strikes me as being so much more consistent with a fabric than actual skin and muscle. Now, that said, that head, man, if it's a fake, it's a great head.
It's really
great, the side profile,
really
I mean,
good
it's
head,
tight,
yep.
it's good head, and that's hard to find in this world. And the shoulders all week, but then you got the butt, which just kind of sits there. I kind of go with the diaper theory thing. Doesn't really move. But then you got the calf, the right calf. Man, that's a pretty friggin' good definition there.
Yeah.
You've got Gimlin, who seems very sincere. I agree with that, that he appears to be very sincere about this. But even he himself, in his interview with Greg Long, and please don't start on how bad Greg Long's bowed. Yes, it's inconsistent. It's got bad parts, but I don't think everything in it is absolutely false. When he interviewed Gimlin, even Gimlin himself said, look, nobody thought, a lot of people who knew Ted Bundy never would have thought he could have done what he did. So even Gimlin himself points out, and in fact, if Gimlin was right here, I think he would agree, scientifically speaking, you can't take someone's word for it.
No.
And I think too many people just take his word. They say that is the linchpin on which I base my belief on the film. I think that's, I mean, I guess I can't really judge someone who does. That's not fair. But scientifically, obviously, that's lame.
It's certainly not the linchpin. I think that all of the things you said are true. And the issues with the film, I don't know. I mean, I've never seen a second Sasquatch walking along a creek bed,
right.
So I don't know if that's what they look like. The thing that,
right.
that sells it for me is the footprints and the quality of the footprints, and especially Meldrum's subsequent analysis of the footprints. And since I have not seen anyone in those conditions, you know, in while being filmed, create footprints that look like that, I have to say that I feel that the film is probably true and probably real.
Well, damn it. You know what? That's why you and I have to work on a project, since you... Can I reveal this?
Reveal.
you have the actual... exact specific type of camera that Patterson had. I mean...
I do.
And I agree. I think, actually, for me as well, that is what... If you can't... Well, this gets into... It's a quick summary. Basically, if it was a hoax, then... And if Gimlin was duped, then that means that a guy in a suit would have had to make those prints.
Absolutely.
Right. If it was a hoax and Gimlin was in on it, then you have to show how those prints could be made some other way. Either if it was a guy in a suit, how they, you know, either weighted him or he hopped and did whatever,
right.
or they had some kind of fake prosthetic or whatever. But I agree, you should demonstrate that. And it is one of those percentage of things that I wonder about. Now, Tube, as you know, Matt Crowley. I think has done great, pretty groundbreaking work.
Really,
as far
really
as
interesting stuff. Yeah.
Really, with the alleged dermal ridges, I think for me, 99% convincing that what most people think are dermal ridges are actually casting artifacts in several casts. You know, he's done some experimentation with some fake feet. And I think, I can't remember, I asked him about a year ago. I haven't talked to him recently, and he thought it was possible that somebody wearing a suit could leave those prints. But obviously that's not enough. I mean, I would want to see that demonstrated.
Yeah.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, it's really the only way to stop talking about the Gimlin film, the Patterson-Gimlin film, I think, is to do what we're talking about. And I think it has to be done with somebody who thinks it's real, along with someone who thinks that it could possibly or probably be faked, because otherwise it's probably not going to be... what was the show that with the British guy?
Bigfoot Monster Mystery?
Is that the one where they called up Gimlin and got him to say...
Oh, no, that was the BBC...
Yeah.
Chris Pacman.
That guy. They put like somebody in an orangutan suit, and made him walk along some like Los Angeles, wash. It was just like
It was lame.
And they said, "Well, look, we can do it." I'm like, "That looks nothing like the Patterson film.
Yeah.
you didn't do anything."
Yeah, there has never been a serious attempt, in my opinion.
No, there hasn't.
To really try to recreate the film. That means same camera, which you have.
I do.
Basic lighting. I mean, we know if it was shot on October 20th, 1967, we know the approximate angle was 1:30 approximately afternoon. We know the angle.
Yep.
We know the approximate distance.
Yep.
And the back lobe, the effective film sight is no longer really in essence because it's changed.
No, you can't use the actual sight anymore because it's all grown up.
Right. So now what I think would happen, I don't think you could absolutely prove either way, because you could make the argument. Let's say you found someone and you were able to make a suit only with materials available in 1967.
Right.
And you could get it close. Let's say hypothetically, you could get it close and it looks, wow, okay, now I understand that maybe you could do it. It wouldn't absolutely prove that it wasn't a Bigfoot, because the argument could be made, well, maybe they really did get a Bigfoot and you were just able to recreate it. Okay, fine. But what I think it would prove pretty much is that those who say it absolutely
right.
or probably had to be a Bigfoot,
right.
that's not the case.
If you can recreate those footprints especially.
Yes, I totally agree. That's a huge, huge factor. Again, it doesn't. Yeah, either by someone walking in a suit, or by some other means, because it's still possible. As I've yammered on about on Bigfoot forums, that if it was a hoax and if Gimlin was in on it, that somehow they perhaps created those, because it doesn't mean that the guy in the suit had to make the prints. It could have made them after the fact.
Now, what do you?
Because they were there all afternoon.
How much weight do you put to the fact that Bob Titmuss was there on scene, sort of investigating the scene? He's the one that cast most of the casts.
It's a good question. I don't actually, for one, I never met Bob Titmuss. I know a lot of people revere him because Green mentions him a lot, but he's kind of a mystery man. We just see his name pop up. What do we really know? He's also a guy, you could say, on the skeptical side, like years later, he said he saw three of them climbing the side of a mountain somewhere. It was on a special. He says, I thought I saw three, so how realistic is that? Or is there wishful thinking involved with this guy? And then you have to also take into consideration, and I'm sure it's been talked about a lot, but the fact that, Timmons didn't get there until 9 days after the fact.
Yeah.
And I was actually reading Kenneth Wiley's book on Bigfoot. It was really the first kind of skeptical book written about the Bigfoot phenomena. And how, according to Gimlin's own testimony, that this water, it was raining so hard, and he actually said that Bluff Creek was a raging river. Well, how did all those footprints still exist? I mean, how come they weren't washed away? They did apparently cover them with some bark, but that wouldn't stop a flooding. I don't know, but apparently there was a lot of tracks, and there were still nine left. And apparently some of the tracks, remember Krantz talking about this, show evidence of that they were affected by water. Mm. So I don't really think that's a huge issue with it. I just think it's what needs to be determined as best as possible is from the Laverty photos, from Gimlin's own testimony, others who saw it, the relative depth, and like you said, how can they be or can they be recreated? Now, the other interesting thing with this is the claim that when some of those that were cast, there is an apparent toe movement mm-hmm. in between the, you know, one print A and print C have different toe configuration. Mm-hmm. That would seem to speak more toward that it was either a real Sasquatch or that if it was a fake, that those toes were independent as
yeah.
well.
On the guy, I would like to see a rubber foot with articulated toes, toes that weren't connected. How would they appear, and would they appear to move and all that kind of stuff?
Well, but here's the other thing. See, apparently some of Tube's experiments with the fake feet he's tried to do, he's indicated that he thinks that might be partly an illusion. What you think is, he's wearing a rigid foot, but when he made different impressions and he casted them or looked at them, it looked like the toes had apparently moved. So that would have to be part of the experimentation too, I think. It's not, it's like this claim that the mid-tarsal break thing, if you go on a beach, Daigling points this out in his book, and I've done it for myself. I live 4 miles from the beach, walk barefoot on the sand after the, apparently I have a mid-tarsal break, because right in the middle, there is a, you know, that bulgy thing that comes up just like in that Laverty photo. So I the whole mid-tarsal break thing, I don't quite think there's enough. I think a lot of it's more speculative than actually based.
I would be curious
there.
To see if I have, like I have, I don't even know what my shoe size is, but let's say I have size 11 feet. And I have on a footprint that extends, a big rubber foot that extends
right.
5 inches beyond the end of my foot. The ball of my foot, you know, my foot, my natural break would be about in the middle of that big rubber foot.
Right.
And that, well, I don't know if that would cause an apparent mid-tarsal break.
Right. I don't know either. And see, what's interesting is that one photo, this is what really keeps me. I mean, how is that Laverty photo? I think the one, it's not the one with the pipe in it, but
no, it's the one with the stick. Yeah,
the stick. Yeah, the stick's been broken.
Yeah,
is how clear those toes look. And on one hand, it's like, how could a guy wearing a suit leave those toe indentations so clearly? But on the other hand, it's like they almost look too clear. You know, they look almost too good to be true. Mm-hmm. So it's
well. This is something that, and we could talk about the Patterson film. Seriously, we could talk about this all night long.
Yeah.
What I find interesting, and this is the thing that makes me say that if it's a fake, Gimlin has to be in on it, because the story that both Bob and Roger told, and as far as I know, Bob still tells, is that night after they came back from taking the film to wherever they took it, which is a whole nother conversation,
right,
it started to rain, and Roger didn't want to leave the tent, and Bob went out and covered them with bark and cardboard or whatever. I don't even know exactly what he covered it with. But
they brought cardboard. Apparently, I think they got from Hodgson's store, but I think Gimlin said that it wasn't going to work because it was raining, so he was able to strip some bark off.
So this, the interesting thing is, you've got I think 10 casts in the whole series, and
I think nine.
Okay.
There's nine. Maybe I'm thinking of the 9 days. I don't know, but yeah, it's close to that.
Patterson cast the two boring flat ones, like they were all casting back then. He left all the interesting ones, and if they, let's say they're a fake, let's say it's a guy in a suit. All the really good tracks he left, or at least the ones that we feel now are really good, and it was Gimlin, the guy who wasn't in on it, the patsy, who went back to cover them up, and it doesn't make any sense. You went to all this trouble, you made these great footprints, a whole bunch of them, and you only cast two of them, and you left the other ones out there to face the elements with this off chance that somebody might... I mean, it just seems like incredible to me that...
Well, no, I think if it was a hoax, Patterson could very well know that... I mean, he knew that Green and DeHinden would come down, whether this was real or hoaxed anyway.
But
they were going to come down with the dogs.
But they didn't. Nobody came down.
You know, but they were supposed to. That's, according to, I was just reading today, when Gimlin said that Roger called Green from Willow Creek, and they were trying to get dogs down there.
They wanted the BC Museum to send down dogs.
Right. So, but it also could have been that the rain was so torrential. They did have two casts, and he figured it's too gnarly to get him now. And it'll just, again, if it's a hoax scenario, that they'll still be there whenever whoever comes back, and it'll just add to the credibility of the whole thing.
Well, it certainly did in my book. So if that was the case, then it was a...
But just look at it this way. I mean, if it was a hoax, we made these two prints. These are two good prints we have right here. We don't need the other ones. And why would they need the other ones? I don't know. I mean, that's what's interesting about this logic works on both sides of the argument a lot of the time. It's just like a reason for it being real and a reason for it being fake. There's various things that make sense. But I think where we completely agree in relation to this issue is the fact that experimentation, like serious experimentation, should be done in relation to trying to recreate those prints. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, or a challenge out there, you know, I mean, not Green's challenge. Green's challenge is kind of bogus in my opinion. That's because that's a whole other story.
The reward?
Too. Yeah, because it's like one of the conditions that has to be on the side of a hill leaving prints. John Green told me, or mentioned online, I forgot which of the two, that he never saw prints on the side of a hill, and one guy told him that he had seen them. So it was on hearsay, something he'd never seen himself, and that was going to be a condition for a $100,000 reward. That's kind of lame. You need to have photographic evidence of that, I think, to make it a valid basis on which to put up the $100,000. I don't know. I'm not green bashing, seriously. I love John, but we've had some arguments.
Yeah, you've had arguments with a lot of people.
I do. Well, I just, I don't know, man. I just think it's not that there's, I mean, and you got to agree, man. I mean, there's definitely some fishy stuff with Patterson. That is.
Oh, you know, Patterson, he's no saint. And
yes.
My point is, I see nothing in the man's past, in his biography, that draws a line to an exceptionally well-done fake Bigfoot film. I mean, so the guy may have been sort of a minor league con man, if you will. He's, you know, don't look in my past. I mean, none of us are perfect. But none of it suggests to me that he had what it took to create what we see on that film. It isn't like he didn't spend a year at, you know, CalArts in the filmmaking section. I mean, what about him? So he wasn't a great guy. So he kept the camera longer than he should have. All that kind of stuff. What has that got to do with the movie? You know, I don't know.
Well, I agree that the movie is the main. It has to be that movie is the main area of contention because, like I was saying, you can look at, you know, like who's perfect and the facts surrounding the film can be looked at from both perspectives and can make sense for both of the cases. But I think that the fact that he had some artistic ability does speak toward the possibility, at least, of hoaxing. The fact that, you know, like the stagecoaches he made apparently from scratch, and that he was a pretty good draw. Although those recent things, I think Roger Knight found those. Did you see this, by the way? This was pretty cool, I thought. Mm-hmm. And it actually, I think, well, it can serve both sides of the argument. But remember, you know, in his book, Patterson's book, the year before, Do Abominable Snowmen of America Really Exist?
Right.
There are those drawings. And at the bottom, the right-hand bottom, it says RP, indicating that Patterson drew these himself, and you go, hey, that's a pretty good artist, right? And this is the one that has the William Rowe, the female, so you see breasts, right?
Right, right.
Well, apparently either Knights or somebody else found the fact, what happened was, is Patterson just ripped that photo off from a magazine. He traced it. So you can look at it, well, maybe he's not as good an artist, but then here's another con thing he did, another sneaky thing. Now, again, it doesn't mean that he could create a suit, but I personally don't, you know, again, and it's from Long's interviews of people he actually knew who characterized the guy as being pretty creative. I mean, the term genius was brought up more than once, that he was very innovative. You know, in those listening now know, you know, for that the famous scream that people thought for years was Patterson made that scream in a bell tower, I think it was. He yelled into a bell and got that scream for his, I guess, documentary he was working on. So that he was an innovative dude. And I what I'm not convinced of is that he couldn't have come up with this on his own. To me, the argument that it had to be a lot of money and it had to be years of experience, I just don't buy. I think he's been into it for 7 years. He could have had the incentive, knowing he was dying. He's making a documentary. His basic personality was one that he knew this would be a big score. In fact, one thing I think is a possibility with this whole thing is that he could have been wanting to create a suit for dramatization purposes because he was making a dramatized documentary. Gimlin dressed up as the Native American, one of those kind of cornball 60s things. And so maybe the original intent was, I'm going to do it. And then when they actually shot it, they went, damn, man, that might look pretty good. And so when they went back, they told Hodgson, right, before they even looked at the footage. So maybe if it was a hoax, he was just convinced this is damn good and we can try to pass this off as being real.
That just seems incredibly gutsy. I mean, you the scenario, again, everything you're saying is the assumption that Gimlin is in on it, right? If he's carrying the suit around for sort of recreation purposes, he's not going to hide it from Gimli.
Well, you got to remember this. I don't know. There's problems with this theory as well. But a lot of people feel that where this happened, there was absolutely no roads. There was a road really nearby. So if he had worked out somebody to be waiting there with the suit, and when he did disappear that morning for a while, which Gimli said he thought was odd, although I don't know if he went upstream or down, who knows on that, but there could have been a coordinated, this is not the era of cell phones, obviously, and there's no, so they had to coordinate it fairly well.
Smoke signals.
Yeah. So, again, maybe that goes more toward the argument that if it was a fake Gimli, it wasn't.
I think what's awesome about this film is that 40 years have gone by, and we can still argue both sides of it.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's the best mystery within the mystery of Bigfoot.
Right.
It's sort of the
pinnacle of the whole thing, because you can sit there and you can look at the exact same set of circumstances, and sort of weave five or six different ways they could have come about, and I find that really interesting.
Yeah, I think the only thing that would for most people that would put it to rest. I mean, a recreation that got close might for some, but even more so that if it was a hoax and if Gimlin was in on it and he confessed to it.
Oh, good Lord. If Gimlin comes out, yeah, if Gimlin, and I've never spoken to him personally about this, but I know people who have. I first of all, I would be completely flabbergasted if he did that. But
I would too, actually.
If that guy comes out and says, oh yeah, that was just me and Bob having a laugh, and look, it lasted all this time. Okay, done. I'm sorry, he was there, and I'm not gonna carry the torch any longer. If one of the guys, there's only two guys standing there, right? And if one of them says it was, Bob Hieronymus or his cousin Al, whatever. That would pretty much seal it.
Yeah. Well, and you got to remember too, people have used the argument that, and I think it's a good thing to consider, is like they say, well, Gimlin had his chance. If it was a hoax, he could have admitted it a short time after, I guess within a few years, because he was being cut out of the deal, and he was apparently very pissed about it. But I don't think that necessarily holds up, because he could have thought, well, I'm going to work this out, I'm going to get back in on it, and I am going to make some money, which apparently he has made a little bit. But also, there's all these other possible factors that could be involved, like, if he revealed this to somebody, who knows, with people in that community, what else would be revealed? I mean, people can have a lot of motivations for keeping something quiet. It's not just necessarily the one thing. That's purely speculative. I don't know, but it's just, there's a lot of reasons people lie. So, who knows? But again, that said, and for whatever it's worth, when I hear Bob Gimlin talk about the Patterson film, I don't get a sense of bullshit.
Were you at the International Symposium thing there in Willow Creek in 2003? Did you go to that?
No, wasn't there.
Okay, he retold the story in front of that audience, and it was amazing. Again, to your point, it only backs up your point that if he's full of it, he's one hell of a fine actor. Because
I was telling Craig this on the phone the other day. It was like, it's almost one of those things, like, if Gimlin is bullshitting, it's like, and that was found out, how much would that just destroy your faith in anybody? Like, just the fact that, he's that believable, and then it was bullshit. So
I think a lot of people who aren't going to be as involved in the minutiae of the film as you or I are hanging their hat on Bob Gimlin. People who know him personally, or who know people who know him personally, there's an awful lot of sort of just personal faith in that man. And I'm not saying it's poorly placed, because as far as my position is, it's a real movie. He's telling the truth. But there's an awful lot of people who actually believe that man is telling the truth because they believe him personally. That would be a crushing blow to anyone, I think.
Right. Now, to play a quick devil's advocate, and it's not a particularly, it doesn't prove anything, but to me, in Long's book, and I assume you read, did you read the whole thing?
Long's book? No, I couldn't read the whole thing.
Okay.
I could not bring myself to do it.
Okay, but see, like this part of the book, I would find it very hard to believe that it was completely fabricated. And basically what it was, he was curious. He was trying to find out about Gimlin's background, right? What's with this guy? And so when he was digging in the Yakima records, he found that this, I guess it was Robert Gimlin, had been arrested sometime in the mid-60s, right? And he actually long got a copy of the bail bond that was signed to release as Robert Gimlin. Now, Long writes it in the book, the actual transcript, so I'm assuming what he did, he probably tape-recorded the phone call. Doesn't say that in the book because it's probably illegal or maybe whatever, but he's got it. In other words, Gimlin hasn't come back and said that never happened. So in this course of this conversation, he asks Bob Gimlin if he's ever been arrested, and Bob Gimlin says no. He says no 3 or 4 times. That he's never. He says, "I'm a good Christian man. I wouldn't do that or whatever." So, I guess he had found out before he asked him this that the thing on the bail. Actually, Gimlin says, "You know, there's a lot of Gimlins around here. So maybe it was somebody else." But what Long found out was that the two people who signed the bail bond had the same two first names as Bob Gimlin's parents. So it seems pretty clear that Bob Gimlin was lying to Greg Long on the phone. Now, does that mean it was a hoax? Of course not. But for those who say Bob Gimlin is a complete upstanding man and would never lie, you can't say that.
No. I think that there are probably things about my past that I wouldn't be completely honest with, especially with a guy like Greg Long.
Exactly. I might tell him about the time I wore the dress, but...
Sure, but I wouldn't tell him what happened after that, for God's sake.
With the midget and the walrus.
Yeah, and the grapefruit. Good Lord. Again, I'll edit all this out, so it's fine. I just don't think that again, it's sort of like going back to the Patterson thing, you know. So what, he made a mistake when he was younger, he got arrested, and then he lied about it later. I don't know that means much, and again, it doesn't indicate a pattern. You can't find 50 guys who'll say, "Oh yeah, that Bob Gimlin, he's a con."
Right. That's right. I just say that, and then plus, well, then you also have. I thought this is a very interesting thing, and it doesn't go toward the issue of Gimlin's sincerity or not, but it was pretty clear to me in that the Pacman thing, you know, that there was some degree, if not. You know, I mean, he even said that he still believes it was a real creature, but that there was some degree of doubt that he said, the older I get, the more, you know, I don't know, maybe I could have been hoaxed. He at least acknowledged that possibility in that interview. And then those people have claimed, well, you could edit that. And, you know, that's baloney. If you listen to what he says, it's pretty clear. What else could he possibly be responding to? He's specifically talking about the film and that he felt it was possible he could have been duped. But he still does say right after that, I still think it was an animal. Then after that, you know, then he got back into around the believers and stuff, and he was totally gung-ho. That's exactly what he saw. He was positive. So, I mean, who knows? Again, it's eyewitness testimony. I agree that he seems very, very believable.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows?
Who knows?
We'll be right back.
To sum this up, because we've been talking about PGF for quite a while now, and there's a whole lot of people who are just like, they're tuned out at this point because they don't give a rat's ass about the PGF anymore. I think we completely agree. Somebody has to go out there. Somebody who is knowledgeable enough to have some credibility in the field, who isn't trying to, you know, profit off of the experience. They need to go out there and do a real recreation, and I think that while it won't put it to bed, it'll go a long way towards answering an awful lot of questions that people have about the film.
Now, if you... I would edit this out. I will not edit it. I don't know if he wants me talking about it, but we can talk about it afterwards. It's somebody working on, well, it's somebody who's working on a project.
Let's talk about it afterwards.
We'll talk about it afterwards, but somebody's working on a project. And,
that's very mysterious.
Yeah, what's that?
That's very mysterious.
It is. Well, you probably know it is, but anyway. the thing is, I think, and also what would be interesting, I think, initially to do is just a. If someone was trying to recreate a suit from that time, again, using only things available in '67, is you could do like a rough, just a rough idea, basically just to get an idea. What does that a guy in a suit at approximately 80 to what 120 feet away, walking away, look like compared to what the Patterson film blew up? And I think even to make it more specifically scientific, what would be interesting if it's possible to do, and if it got detailed enough, is to actually go through the replication process that has gone on with the Patterson film. In other words, do the cyberchrome process.
Yeah.
Because it's those photos and like man-like monster on trials are really cool-looking photos. But if you're going to be trying to get it as close
to
that
whole, you have to look at it the same way. Yeah, you have to do all the
things. Yeah, because, you know, something... That's why I always get, you know... people are quick to compare, you know, movie gorillas or TV gorillas with the Patterson film. Well, TV and movie gorillas are mostly shot on 35 millimeter, which is going to, by definition, going to be showing more detail. And they're not usually shot 80 to 120 feet away. So even though you blow it up, I mean, how much is detail you think you're seeing and how much is a little bit of a fuzzy area that, that leaves room for interpretation?
Yeah.
That's what I think an experiment would could garner. Proof? Well, either way, no, probably. No, but just, no. You know.
Because, I mean, then what would happen is you'd have 40 years of people talking about your recreation of the film that happened 40 years ago. But I think it still would help answer an awful lot of questions, and it certainly would keep people from saying, you could never, you'd know one way or the other. You know, our best effort, our best try, we were either successful or we weren't, and so
right.
We can move on.
Yeah.
You know, with at least that part, at least that part of the conversation.
Yeah. What was our last thing? I'm sorry, I was looking to the right.
Well,
here.
Our last topic for the
yes.
The year in review, 2007 in review, is the fact that at the end of all of this, after talking for almost an hour and a half here, really nothing of consequence happened in the world of Bigfoot over the past year, or the past two or three or five or 10 years.
Yeah.
Nothing seriously interesting happened. Now, if you're a person who's listening to this and you think you saw a Bigfoot in the past year, obviously something did happen to you, but I'm talking
yes.
about the field in general. Nothing happened.
Yeah, I would say it was pretty weak, and kind of what you alluded to earlier about that when, you know, people, you know, the seekers, whether they're armchair researchers or in it for fame, glory, money, you know, I think to a degree maybe sometimes desperation sets in, greed, who knows, and you weak evidence suddenly becomes strong evidence or stronger than it should be considered. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what 07 and 06 have shown, is like that's become almost rampant in a way. It's just like, yeah, I guess it could be, but it's still like, no, because of this. And, you know, it's like there's still, yeah, nothing that conclusively proves it. And
no.
There's a lot to suggest. For me personally, what still keeps me, I mean, besides the thing that happened to me in 92, is just the sheer volume of reports over the years. That I find hard to reconcile with a purely sociological phenomena of hoaxing and misinterpretation.
I think that and the footprint evidence, even the non-PGF footprint evidence, those are the two things that force me to create a hypothesis that this thing...
Yeah.
Is out there, because I agree with you. I can't imagine how that is some sort of... It can't all be hoaxes. It can't all be hallucinations. It can't all be misidentifications, because if you read these stories, if
yeah.
you hear these people talk about what they say they've seen, some of them are quite specific. Some of them have had things that they've seen for more than just a couple of seconds, and
yeah.
you can't really throw it into any of those categories very easily. Anyway, so yeah, that would be
yeah.
what keeps you coming back.
And I think there's kind of a, I think what happens is people will tend to, I'm guilty of this all the time. You get excited about Bigfoot, you hear these stories, and that seems credible, and yeah, there's something to this. And there's this kind of this faith develops, well, you know, there's a lot of people believe in this, we're on the internet, and they've got technology. And what you forget is that when you're on the internet and you're thinking about it, and you forget about the vastness of the forests out there and the steepness of the slopes and the density of the vegetation. And you get out there, I mean, I've had moments out there where you're going, this thing could go on for many, many years, if in fact they do exist, which I'm, you know, 99.999382% convinced they do exist. That because if you have small numbers, you know, pretty high intelligence, perhaps nocturnal to a degree, man, you could have them living fairly close to fairly good-sized towns because they could be up on these sloped hills, which of which there's thousands and thousands of them in the Pacific Northwest, that nobody in any kind of regular pattern ever goes up near.
Right.
I mean, they, you know, I always remember, it was a Canadian primatologist years ago I talked to, forgot the guy's name, and I played him the Puyallup screams, which apparently now may could very well be a coyote.
That's what I hear.
But that aside, and I just asked him basically, I said, if you were a mad scientist and you, you know, were able to clone 2,000 mountain gorillas and you were able to, you know, divide them up into various social groups and then you parachuted them into various parts of the Pacific Northwest and they all landed safely and they could, and assuming their dietary requirements would be met, which I think they probably could, how often would they be seen? And he was like, oh, you'd hardly ever see one. It would be, occasionally you'd hear a report of maybe one seeing one cross a road and, and basically his description was kind of meeting what apparently seemed to be happening. I mean, you have things that don't have to apparently move around a lot. I wouldn't think they have to. Gorillas don't. I mean, we know gorillas exist, and apparently these things are pretty close to gorillas, at least morphologically, if not behaviorally. But it just seems if you had a creature like that here, it could remain undetected pretty well for a long time. So,
And what's interesting about that word you just used, undetected, what does undetected mean? Because obviously people are seeing them. There's evidence.
Right.
They're leaving footprints. If you believe some of the older stories, they may have been shot and killed previously by people. What does undetected mean?
When I say undetected, I guess I mean verified by way of a body.
Undescribed by science, right.
Undescribed by science, yeah. Yeah, common sense or intuition would, again, leads me to believe that they probably do exist, but respecting science is perhaps maybe I do too much. No, I don't think you can respect science too much.
No.
Especially when you're talking with other people, because, you know, look how much has been believed in the world that turned out not to be true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the world was flat for how many... No, it's not. You know,
it's
but
not?
Literally every... It's not. I just read it on the internet, so it must be true.
Oh. There's this book said the world is flat. I thought that said the world is flat again.
Yeah.
All right. Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. So, see, I'm not into the whole geography thing. That's not what I'm into, so...
who knows? I was going to ask you this earlier. What do you think... If you were laying odds in Vegas, and hopefully that would all you'd be doing in Vegas with the odds, is what do you put? How soon, if you were to put, how soon before, if in fact they exist, before generally acknowledged acceptance via a body carcass?
You know,
occurs?
I think that's like predicting the big one in California. You know, like they always say, well, it could happen anytime between now and 200 years from now.
Right.
I kind of feel the same way.
I think
there's enough. I mean, there aren't a lot of people out there looking, right? If you count them up, people who are actually out there, there aren't a whole lot relative to the human population of the country, and so it could happen tomorrow. It could happen 5 years, 10 years, 100 years from now. I don't know. I think it's just like the California earthquake, in that it could happen.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy. And what do you think is the most probable occurrence of events following that? Let's say hypothetically it happened tomorrow. How big of a story would it be? What governmental action, assuming it happened in the United States, what do you think would happen?
I think it would be a huge story because you've got all kinds of things going on there. You've got this sort of the way that our popular culture has been soaking in Bigfoot for the past 50 years. So you've got that angle on the story. You've got the angle on the story that it's a new primate, which are practically never discovered at this point.
It's an upright primate, too, the first one besides us.
Absolutely, and it's not unique, but it makes us no longer unique as well. So I think there's all kinds of reasons why it's a massive story. And I think from a governmental standpoint, I don't know. I think that we can't protect owls. This isn't an owl. Or maybe we can't protect owls. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting into something I don't know enough about. But I think that there'd be an awful lot of talking for an awful long time. And I think what would happen is the individual states would move to... And look at Northern California as an example. In Northern California, Bigfoot is like Mickey Mouse is in Disneyland. There's Bigfoot everything all over the place. So I think that if you were a smart legislature from Northern California, you would slap some sort of protection on this animal as soon as you could. So I think you'd see a lot of stuff happening at the state level. Primarily in the Pacific Northwest. I don't think that the federal government could get their act together because you've got all the lobbyists and everything else would start getting involved. Meldrum told me something very interesting back in 2003, and I believe it was Meldrum. Yeah, it was Meldrum. He was wearing pants at the time. They were really tight pants, which was kind of weird, but he was wearing them. Something to the effect that he had knowledge of an executive in a timber company, and this could be completely wrong. I'm just going to say it right now. I could be making this up, but this is what I remember. Who had a file of all of the sort of sightings and encounters and things like that that had happened to employees of the timber company. In a desk drawer that he was saving for the time when the government came knocking to say, we have to protect this animal, to say, look, I've got this file going back, decades, and I see no indication that their population or their activity has decreased or whatever, which I thought was really interesting. So I don't think the federal government would ever get their act together to protect it. I'm pessimistic. But I think the states would do all kinds of stuff.
Right. Yeah, I think, did you read... Robert Michael Pyle's book, Where Bigfoot Walks.
Yes, it's a good book. It's a great book.
Yeah, it's a great book. And he, if I remember correctly, has quite a bit of speculation in there on the, I guess having talked to some loggers and how he basically feels that he thinks generally the logging companies up there and employees up there have kind of a built-in symbiotic relationship with Sasquatch. So they're both good for each other because how bad the spotted owl problem for logging was in Northern California. I mean, you're a logger, you don't want Bigfoot. I mean, I think your average logger would not want Bigfoot discovered because it's going to shut down logging in that area.
Right.
Well, maybe not with this current administration, but who knows? So, I think that's an interesting... an interesting aspect to the phenomena that there would be. There's a lot of reasons, and not just economic, but just people who maybe live in the woods and they see one and they keep it quiet because they've seen examples. They've watched King Kong several times.
Yeah, look what happens to the big monkey at the end of King Kong. Perfect
example.
We don't like monkeys, which is exactly the opposite of what I said at the beginning of the show when I said we love monkeys, but. Anyway, I can do that.
Some of us, though, some of us want to exploit the big monkey, and we should learn to respect the big monkey.
And whatever you do, fear the big monkey. That's what you have to do. Fear the big monkey.
Yeah. And on that would be a good way to go out with the show
That would be a great way to end it, just like that.